we are on the offense right now, purchasing a lot. We've done many deals this year and last year, and we're holding off on selling. We have not sold anything for a little while. It's not the best time to sell, but we are seeing that change. The market's coming back, and we do plan to start some dispositions or sales next year.
Welcome to Investing in the US, a podcast for real estate investors, business owners, and aspiring entrepreneurs looking to grow their wealth by investing in US real estate. I'm your host, Reid Goossens, and so far, I've acquired over $800 million worth of investments on various properties across the United States. On this podcast, I interview go-getters, risk-takers, and the best in the business to learn more about their investment journey and the cutting-edge strategies they are applying towards building a legacy. For more on growing your own wealth and by investing in the US, visit www.reidgoossens.com. Today on the show, I had the pleasure of speaking with Jeff Gleiberman. And Jeff is the president of MG Properties and is responsible for overseeing investment transactions, operational strategies, and partner relations. He's having held different roles in various debt departments across MG Properties. Jeff has built a deep understanding of the inner workings of this organization, and he has a unique experience that has allowed him to drive sustainable platform of growth while staying true to the firm's founding principles. I'm really pumped and excited to have him on the show today to share his incredible insight and knowledge into today's market. But enough enemy. Let's get him out here. G'day, Jeff. Welcome to the show. How are you doing today, mate?
Doing very well. Thank you for having me.
Oh, mate, my pleasure. We're just chatting in the green room a little bit. Local group. You guys are out of San Diego, right?
Yep. Yeah, we're based out of San Diego. That's where our business was founded by my father in 1992. And wow, we have expanded over the last about 33 years to 6 different states. I'm sure we'll get into it here shortly, but it's another beautiful Friday afternoon in San Diego.
Yeah, yeah. Well, with that, I do want to get into that story, but before we do, can you rewind the clock and tell me how you made your first dollar as a kid?
Yeah, so I mentioned my father, Mark, founded our business in 92. He was a tax accountant, and I was about 5 or 6 years old when he started our business. He was doing everything, the property management, the asset management, finding the deals. And it was a very busy time for him. So the weekends were the acquisitions times. And I would join him on those trips starting when I was 9 or 10 years old. And the deal was, if we found a property together and ended up buying it, I would get $5 plus 10 cents for every unit that was there. So first acquisition that I was there for, on Greenbrier Street in Oceanside, North San Diego, was a 48-unit deal. Got $9.80. Remember it very, very specifically. And after that, I would run to the newspaper, look for the biggest communities that I could find, and just really looked forward to those weekends and spending the time with my father.
Did you, as you grew up and went to college and all that stuff, and or maybe didn't, did you have a passion for real estate?
I always was involved in the family business, always knew it's something I wanted to do. And I grew more and more in love with it as the years went on. So when I turned 13, I started working at the properties, doing maintenance and leasing. We were growing our portfolio just in San Diego at that time, a couple thousand units at the time, just had various positions throughout my entire life. And I did end up going to college, also getting my master's, working at CBRE for a few years as well before coming back full time a little over 10 years ago.
That's awesome. No, I think you always got to ask the question, right? Like being in the family business, you know, being the dad and mom, hey, you going to go take over the reins? Like what's going to happen here? But it sounds like it's you've fallen into a passion, not even a passion project, but it was a love for what you do in the family. But take me back to the early 90s. What was hunting for deals like compared to today? Because it's obviously a lot different. And how that has evolved in your strategy with MG Properties over the last, 30 years now?
Yeah. So coming out of the savings and loans crisis in the early 90s was an amazing time to be buying. You were buying at super discount to replacement costs. There was just a lot of opportunity to find deals. It was much harder to find deals, though. There wasn't the internet and the ease of accessing deals. So as I mentioned, on the weekends, you would go around knocking on doors, you would look in the newspaper, looking up trust deeds on who owns properties, a lot of calling around. So for that first 8 years, we focused just on San Diego, and we did about 50 deals in San Diego. And then as we grew in scale and got a few thousand units under our belt, we started looking to new markets where we expanded all over California into Oregon, Washington, Arizona, Nevada, and Colorado. So today, We have 32,000 units. It's focused on all on the West Coast, as I mentioned. And having that in-house vertical integration, we do in-house property management, asset management, construction management, and have done it all since day one, really allows us to have all the market knowledge, sub-market knowledge, and really find great deals to target. So that's been one major key to our success and something that we really value is having that in-house expertise.
Sure. But yeah, but early on, it probably wasn't there, right? So you had to go build it, which is always challenging when you're building any organization. You mentioned there, replacement costs, right? It's such a thing that, you know, in your time that at MG, and MG's grown into a in the world where, you know, technology is so much easier to access information. But the word replacement cost versus going in cost, it's still a word today. But investors still ask that. How do you look at back in the early 90s and see that discount compared to where we are today, compared to the run-up we've had and now the stumble blocks with the higher interest rate and environment that we've seen? Like, do you still pull, you know, parallels to the early 90s when you're looking at those sort of metrics and what you're looking at today?
Yeah, we do. The markets are very cyclical, and there's been a few different cycles, obviously, over our last 34 years with the savings and loan, the dot-com, the great financial crisis, COVID, and then most recently with the increase in interest rates. So we always try to target discounts or replacement cost purchases, but it's not always in the market. When things were getting very aggressive a few years ago, it was very difficult to find. When things were getting aggressive in the mid-2000s during the condo conversion craze, it was very difficult to find. But right now, there's a kind of unique opportunity in the market, and we're big buyers right now. We feel it's a great time to buy. The prices, the cap rates, they're just making a lot of sense. So we are seeing a discount to replacement cost, not as much as the last two recessions, but definitely the most in 13, 14 years. So we are on the offense right now, purchasing a lot. We've done many deals this year and last year, and we're holding off on selling. We have not sold anything for a little while. It's not the best time to sell, but we are seeing that change. The market's coming back, and we do plan to start some dispositions or sales next year.
What is that typical rule of thumb you like to look for with that discount to replacement cost? So say like, let's round up, $200K a door is new construction. I'm making that up because that's, you know, in California, it's definitely not that. But like, are you looking at like, 25%, 30%, 50%, you know, on an existing asset to say, okay, there's enough buffer there to feel good about this and disposing of this in 5, 6, 7 years time?
Yeah, no, that sounds good. Yeah, the 200K a unit could just be the land in California. But,
yeah.
But we'll use it as an example. Anything below that 200K. So there's going to be a developer profit that needs to be built into it as well. So as long as we're buying at a discount to replacement cost, it's going to mean that there's not going to be a lot of new competition or not a lot of new supply coming. So we just want to be anywhere below the replacement cost. Obviously, the more the better, but we're really looking at replacement cost and trying to be as far below. Today, we're seeing around 25 to 35% on the purchases that we're doing, maybe a little bit more. But even if it was just regularly below replacement cost in a great location and a great property, and we could find some management synergies and upside, it would be a good deal and one that we'd want to own.
And I assume vintage would play into that as well, right? Like you really got to understand. So are you targeting certain vintage that maybe you were targeting, you know, that you're not targeting anymore? You know what I mean?
A little bit, yeah. So we've got two main strategies, just like most other companies out there. One's a value add strategy where deals are 10 years old or older. And one is a core plus strategy where it's 10 years or newer. We're always doing some form of value add. It's obviously lighter on the newer properties and heavier on the older properties. We're always trying to have economies of scale with our other properties and save on expenses and use our portfolio synergies. But we have done value add projects at $85,000, $95,000 a unit, and we've done as little as 1,000 or 2,000 units. So we've kind of ranged all over the board. We've done about 215 different deals over the last 34 years. We're currently holding 116 of those, and that is the 32,000 units I mentioned. So we've roughly sold a little bit over 100 full cycle, and it's been a big mix of newer to older. I would say we're it'd have to be a very, very good return, very good deal to go, you know, into the 60s, 70s, or 80s. We're trying to do 90s or 2000s or newer.
Yep. Like everyone else, right? Other man and their dog. So now, as you know, and we talk about, I'm going down replacement cost for a reason, because everyone like is projecting out, you know, you're buying, I know, and you know that to get a mid-teen IRR to your investor, you've got to try and create 50% value in the NOI over a five-year hold. Like, so if you're buying at 100K a door, the exit needs to be 150, 160. You're buying at 200K a door, it needs to be, you know, 300 or more. So do you fundamentally believe that the cost of construction will continue to go up? And it's a bit of a pretty dumb answer, pretty dumb question, but it's more to do with what your senses of where you're buying today versus what you probably bought back in 08, 09, 1992, 1993, 2001, like all those recessions. Do you think that's still going to be you look at that exit price and go, okay, I feel good about that, you know, in 5 or 6 years' time?
Yeah, we don't think that construction costs are going to increase as fast as they have this last 5-10 years, but they're going to not go down either. So it's just going to be a gradual increase. Labor, obviously, there's a really good jobs report today. I'm sure everyone saw the rates went up.
I need to see that. What it come in at?
Yeah, it was big. Rates took a big jump today. I mean, so and that's significant for us. Obviously, we're long-term fixed rate finance borrowers, usually borrowing 7 to 10 year loans. We're a little bit longer term on our holds. We plan for 7 to 10 year holds. And today's metrics that we're seeing are a little bit lower than mid-teens IRRs. So net returns are low teens IRRs in the markets that we monitor. And we would much rather over deliver than over promise. So we try to, you know, be realistic with our expectations. And that's how we've really got a lot of repeat investors. And we've got people that are in many, many deals with us over many.
Hey guys, this is a quick ad for our latest multifamily investment opportunity called the Avalon Apartments, located in Dallas, Texas, the fastest growing MSA in the nation. Now, rapid fire, here are the three reasons why we love this asset. Firstly, great investor returns of over 20% annualized. The second thing, of the 226 units, 30% have already been renovated and they're achieving a $250 rental premium. Now, our business plan is pretty simple. We'll come in and renovate the remaining 70% to achieve those proven rental levels, then rely on a modest 3% rent growth thereafter. It's very conservative, very straightforward, and the same thing we have been doing successfully for over a decade. Now, last thing, pricing for multifamily apartment properties have fallen more today than they did during the 2008 global financial crisis. This could very well be the best time in commercial real estate cycle to pick up cheap assets. If you're interested to find out more, click on the link below.
20 years.
Yeah, well, you've got a track record of cycling over 100 deals. I'm sure it looks pretty good when you, hey, how's his track record? Here it is over here. So as a young syndicator myself, I don't have nowhere near 100 deals track record, but it's something to aspire to. You know, one thing being not from America, you know, we spoke in the green room about just the run-up we've seen in the past 10 years. What do you think the next 10 years have got? Because I feel like we've treated the multifamily market, given how much everything was rising crazy, and this is rents as well, a bit like fixing and flipping. Like I've sold deals in 3 years and doubled people's money, and it's, wow, look at me, I'm a genius. And it's like, no, you're not a genius. The market just really helped you out. So how do you think are we going back to the fundamentals of where we were, you know, doubling your money over 5 to 7 to 8 years, that sort of more slow, steady wins the race rather than these sort of like high octane returns in very, very short periods of time?
Yeah, we're kind of going back to that slow, consistent run that we've seen. But whenever that switches, and it will switch at some time when it's going to, you know, get really heated again, there's going to be good rent growth, and it's, no one's going to know until it happens. So we're really trying to focus on the fundamentals of each submarket, the location and the quality of each deal. And when that market shifts, we'll be ready. But there is a lot of new supply coming just in most markets. And it's really delivering this year. Takes 16, 18 months to lease up. There's going to be 2 years of slower performance. Then things will gradually get better. And at some point, there's going to be some very, very strong years over the next 10 years.
Let's pivot a little bit and talk about what's happened and transpired. And I'd love your thoughts on how we are at in the market we're in right now, call it some sort of negative rent growth in some markets, depending on where you look, the supply, you know, COVID money, COVID in general had a massive impact on house formation, reformation. What's your thoughts on where we are, and are you seeing it as a litmus test for the greater economy?
So being long-term holders, really focusing on that 7 to 10 year hold, we're looking at averages over the hold period. So right after COVID, obviously we had one or two of the best years ever in multifamily history, amazing rent growth. Now we're seeing that slow down, even negative in some markets. But on average, we're still above average over a 5 to 10 year period. We're seeing the markets that were slower right after COVID really come back now. So we're heavy in California. Obviously, we're from California. We have 13, 14,000 units in California. That was our best performing markets this year, where Arizona and Nevada were our best performing markets the previous years. We're seeing a really nice comeback in Seattle, Portland. So over a period of time, the markets average out pretty equal, but you never know which ones are going to go on which year. So we want to have different bets in different markets. So we have diversification, allow that diversification for our partners. And over the long term, it's going to average out. The economics of supply and demand are going to make the properties, you know, resort to averages and solid growth.
Let's now switch gears and talk a little bit about, immunity to the increase in interest rates. And you know, you can tell me as candidly as you want or not want. You know, did you feel any pain like the rest of us in the last couple of years?
A little bit of pain. Luckily, we are fixed rate borrowers. So we had, of the 100 deals we had two deals that had variable rate financing on them. And they were not fun, that is for sure. So feel the pain of people that had a lot more. We converted both of them pretty early on to fixed rate loans just to make sure that they would be safe, secure investments. And we didn't want to have any chance of a capital call or a cash in. So, but I mean, it was a very, very significant increase in yep. interest rates. And if you had a variable rate loan, which luckily we did not have many at all, it would have changed a lot of numbers in the pro forma, that's for sure.
There is a lot of people out there sitting there, you know, with that type of things on their balance books. Are you seeing the blood in the street that everyone wants to see, that everyone's thirsty for right now?
Very surprisingly, we are not. So we would have thought even a year ago, we would have been seeing distress and lenders taking back deals and opportunity. We have seen, I wouldn't say distress, I would say pressure. So people are having pressure to sell. And most of the deals that we've purchased, there's been some form of pressure, but really no distress. The lenders seem to be working with the owners. The pressures that are pushing people to sell have been, you know, what we would expect, but really just not as much distress. We expected more by now.
Mm. And any reason why you think that is? Again, given your long history of at MG, you've seen a few cycles. So like there's got to be some calling cards there for the listeners.
The main thing that we feel is the attractiveness of the asset class and the tailwinds of the fundamentals and demographics of apartments. So there is still so much interest in our world, and the interest has grown throughout the 34 years of our history. We just see new groups, more private equity, more institutional equity coming into our markets. And that has really kept pricing pretty good, actually. So we haven't seen the prices drop as much as maybe obviously office, which has been the worst, or retail or some other asset classes. There's just a lot of competition, a lot of capital looking for multifamily.
I've been in the business for 10 years and not as long as you guys, but I've just seen it's a busy lane. Like you look at anything with the 2000, like particularly last year when there was no real volume or traction of deals, like anything with a two handle in it from a, you know, a vintage perspective, 30, 40 offers, you're like, wow, like the market's coming back strong already, you know, and it won't be people with pressure to get money, you know, out the door and all that sort of stuff. But I know personally as well, like we worked a ton of deals this year where they bought it at 30, it's, you know, the debt's at 25, but you can only, or 24, but you can only get it to work at 21. And you know, you've got equity coming to Jesus, so to speak, but you don't have the debt coming to that same realization. Do you think that's coming, or do you think that's just more, you know, working it out and you know, not extending and pretending, so to speak?
I think it's coming. It has to come at some point. The lenders are going to be in control of it, but I do think it is coming. And obviously, we just saw the first rate cut. There's more to come. That could end up saving a lot of people, depending on how quickly it happens and what happens in the different markets. But with the new supply that's been coming and the slowness of the rate cuts, there's going to be some distress. That distress won't be as distressed as we hope, because there's going to be so many people chasing it and bidding it up, but there will be some distress.
As you built MG with your dad and I assume other family members, what's been the biggest sort of lesson you've learned building an organization of 32 odd thousand units?
The two biggest lessons that I can think of are staying disciplined. We have only done one thing: existing multifamily communities and markets that we know very well. We have been tempted, obviously, to look at development, other product types, different options for different structures and deals, and always just stuck with doing the one thing that we know. And it's worked out every time. We have not had any losses and have had a great track record. Seen other groups and other companies stray and do different things, and just sometimes has a lot of distraction and it doesn't always work out. And also who you surround yourself with. So just really the team that you surround yourself with. We've got 980 employees now, 140 are in the corporate office on our C-suite. Most of them have been with us for 20 plus years. We've worked together super closely and know each other so well. So that has just been such a big key to our success.
How do you keep culture moving forward in the right direction with 980 people?
It gets more and more difficult as the growth comes on and as the years go on, but we want to keep that family feel, obviously. You know, it's a family business. You know, these team members are family to us. Keep them involved in decisions and in company plans and that, you know, our future goals, while also having that institutional feel of being very, you know, efficient and always trying to maximize our profits and our profitability. So it's definitely a challenge, but I feel like we've done a good job, and we'll always strive to keep that company culture going.
Yeah, love it. Last question before we get into the lightning round is, you mentioned that you're bullish on buying now, but what are the other tidbits you're really looking at from, you know, the layman investor, the punter, so to speak, listening to the podcast on wanting to get involved in multifamily or in starting to invest? Like, what's the message out there right now over the next 1 to 5 years?
Yeah, so we bought 8 deals last year, 14 deals this year, about $1 billion to $2 billion a year of acquisitions is kind of our normal average. So yeah, we're definitely seeing a lot of activity from us. I know that it's been slower in the market in general for transactions, but as I talked about earlier, slower fundamentals on the rent growth and the performance for a year or two. It will slowly start to come back to averages where we're starting to see some good years. And then whenever we see those pop years where it's really, really strong, no one ever knows when it's coming. We've seen them many times throughout the last 34 years, but you just want to make sure that you have the right bets in the right submarkets and the right properties to capitalize on that time. Also, sticking with the long-term fixed rate financing strategy, that is something that we just want to continue to stick with. Rates are supposedly supposed to go down, and I do think they are going to go down, but you just never know. So really protecting against the downside and always trying to protect, you know, the investment is going to be key going forward, even with rates going down.
The end of every show, we love to dive into the top 5 investing tips. You don't know these questions I'm about to ask you, but are you ready to get into it?
Ready.
Mate, question number 1, what's a daily habit you practice to keep on track towards your goals?
Structure. So love waking up early, 5 o'clock. Always getting my day started with a few emails, planning out the day, working out at 5:45, and then getting the 3 kiddos at 6:30.
3 kids. Well, I've got 1 and I'm struggling. So 3, I can't even imagine. Question number 2, who's been the most influential person in your career to date?
Easy one for me, my father, Mark. Obviously learned everything from him. We work super closely together. He's still very involved in our business as CEO and founder, and just been an amazing role model and person for me to have in my life.
That's freaking awesome, dude, that you've worked with your dad like that for the last 30 years. So kudos to you. Not many families get that way. So well done. Question number three is, what's the most influential tool in the business? When I say tool, it could be a physical tool like a journal, or it could be a piece of software that you just can't run the business without. What is it?
It's probably my map on my wall. So really, we have a very detailed map of the West Coast right now, and we're trying to monitor demographics and fundamentals, mostly job growth and new supply. So trying to pick the submarkets that have the most job growth, the areas that have the least new supply, and that's where we're going to have the most luck with our properties. So really knowing where our target markets are. And luckily, we've got a team of 9 full-time acquisitions members that are really doing an amazing job underwriting 600 plus deals a year.
That's awesome. That's awesome. Question number four, in one sentence, what's been the biggest failure in your career? What did you learn from that failure?
I would say you got to have a chip in the game to win. So in investing, you are investing, you're taking, you want them to be calculated, de-risked bets. But if you do not have a chip in the game, you are not going to see any wins.
Yeah, I love it. Last question, my friend, where can people reach you to continue the conversation? If I can spit that out, where should they go?
mgproperties.com. Happy to connect with anyone. Please reach out to anyone on the team. And it's been a great time getting to know you.
Yeah, mate. Well, look, I just want to thank you so much for jumping on today's show. I just want to reflect some of the things that I took away from today's show. I think the staying disciplined and the fixed rate debt is so important. And I pitched that on my deals today. You know, yes, interest rates might be going down, but you know, we have seen interest rates spike when we have no control over that, right? We think we have control over things in the world, but when the market shifts, the market shifts. And I think you've nailed it down to being disciplined and keeping those two things, discipline and fixed rate debt, as such a fundamental to your growth in your business, to have sustainability, to build to 32,000 units. So kudos to you, mate, and kudos to everything you built with your dad. Did I leave anything out there?
Nope, just excited about the future and what is yet to come. We obviously got a big election coming up too, which impacts our business, some tax policies, some different things that are going to happen with depreciation. So it'll be an interesting year and then a nice recovery year in 2025, 2026.
All right. Well, hopefully we'll hold you to that. I want to see that coming out. We'll get you back on the show. Well, anyway, mate, thank you so much for jumping in today's show. Enjoy the rest of your week and we'll catch up very, very soon.
Awesome. You have a great one too.
Well, there you have another cracking episode jam-packed with some incredible stuff from Jeff. If you do want to check him out, head over to mgproperties.com to check out anything they have going over there. They've got a huge, huge, massive portfolio. Jeff is a wealth of knowledge. I want to thank you all for taking some time out of your day to tune in to continue to grow your financial IQ. If you like this show, please share it with your friend. It helps us grow the algorithm online. And we're going to do this all again next week. So remember, be bold, be brave, and go give life a crack.